And I've had the opportunity to do this several times in different places, and some of the feedback that I always get is, well, you know, I really didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism. I go to meetings, and I'm talking about from an Al-Anon perspective now. I go to meetings and they tell me that that alcoholism is a family disease and that I've been adversely affected, and then we start talking about how I've been affected. But we never talk about the disease. And I think my group is as guilty of that as any other group around. One of the reasons I think that Al-Anon groups don't talk a whole lot about the disease is because we just don't know a whole lot about it. And one of the things that began to happen with me early in mine and Shirley's journey through recovery is I became real inquisitive about the disease of alcoholism. And it wasn't because I was looking to see how I was affected at that time. It was because I knew that if my wife had a disease called cancer, that I would want to know everything that I could about that cancer. And so I decided I wanted to learn everything I could about alcoholism. And I tell you today, there are some things that I understand about alcoholism. And there are some things today that I know about alcoholism that I have no understanding of at all. You people that have got that disease have a thought process that is alien to me and will always be alien to me, will always be foreign to me. And but just the fact that I know that today, you know, gives me a lot of insight into why my wife did some of the things she did, why she said some of the things she said. I used to... On a Saturday, and we're going to a dance that night. Okay, sorority, one of that sorority she belonged to. And it was my job that Saturday to not let her out of my sight, and so I would know that she had not been drinking when we went to that dance. And then about 5:30, 6 o'clock that afternoon, it was time for the talk, the lecture. About how when we get there now, I'll have two drinks and you have two drinks. And if we just have two drinks, Shirley, we'll be okay. Nothing bad is going to happen. And she would look me dead in the eye and she would say, Bo, you're right. You're right. When we get there tonight, we'll just have two drinks. And that's the most honest and sincere I have ever seen her. And I know she's sober. I have not let her out of my sight. See, and I could go to the bathroom then, because I had gotten the commitment. I hadn't all day, and I had gotten the commitment. And we would get to the party, and I would have my two drinks, and I would look at her, and I would see the change coming, because she was into her second drink. And then it was, how could this happen? How could you do this to me? How could you say this to me? Why do you lie to me now? And, of course, what I know today is she meant that. She meant it with all her being. She didn't know she had a disease called alcoholism. You know? And she didn't know that when she took that first drink or two, it was going to activate an allergy that was going to bring about a phenomenon called craving, and she was going to lose control. Of course, I didn't know that either. And these are some of the things that I've learned about the disease of alcoholism that I want to share with you from an Al-Anon perspective this morning and maybe give you just a little more insight. Another reason for doing it is because of a thing called our tradition. Tradition 5 says each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. If I'm going to encourage and understand my alcoholic relative, I better learn something about the disease of alcoholism. That's what I want to share with you this morning, is a few of those things. It's going to be necessary that use the board a little bit, and I hope you'll be able to see it. We'll write real big. One of the things that... and we'll put the word up here. The word disease. We're talking about a family disease. Okay, Bo, does that mean that just because my loved one has the disease that I have it too? No. What it means is that if there's somebody close to you that has the disease of alcoholism, it means that your life has been put in a state of disease as a result of the disease. That's what it means. Sure it does. But let me suggest this to you. Is alcoholism the only disease that's true of? No, think not. Think about the other disease that I mentioned a while ago, cancer. You got a loved one real close to you that's got cancer. Does your life get into a state of disease as a result of that? Sure it does. If you love them, does your attitude toward them change? You bet. Do all of a sudden now, if it's terminal, aren't you trying to get over there and see them more? Aren't you trying to say those things that you've always meant to say? Do those things that we've always meant to do? Might you even get mad at God because one of your loved ones is dying of disease? Yeah, fits right in. I will say this, though. I think in alcoholism, it's magnified. It is definitely magnified. Yeah. Okay. So let's gain some understanding of the disease of alcoholism. Let's talk about what a non-conference-approved piece of literature for Al-Anon says about the disease of alcoholism. And I didn't bring the book in here with me. It's a blue book. It's called The Textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. And let's talk about what that book says in the doctor's opinion about the disease of alcoholism. Alcoholics, raise your hand. Oh, boy. Bunch of you. Okay. Give me just a little bit of latitude, because remember, this is from an Al-Anon perspective. Okay, but if I get way off base, throw your hand up and say, Bo, that's not what it means, because it may not be. All right? But here's what I get and what I've been taught by people that I consider winners in this program about the disease of alcoholism. And it says in the doctor's opinion, it talks about it being a mental obsession. I'm going to use a little shorthand here. Mental obsession coupled with a physical allergy. And the way I understand it is when you put those two together and you take that drink, you set off something in the alcoholic called the phenomena of craving. Is that right, alcoholic? And in the alcoholic, in the abnormal drinker, the craving for the second drink is greater than that for the first. And the craving for the third drink is maybe even greater than that for the second. And the longer you drink, the stronger the craving gets. This is where the loss of control comes in. And for the alcoholic, in that situation, something outside of the alcoholic is going to stop that drinking spree. Is that pretty much it? You're not going to have 6 or 8 or 9 drinks and say, oh my God, I'm a little lightheaded. That's enough. Right? Okay. You're going to have 6 or 8 or 9 and say, oh man, this, if 9 made me feel this good, what'll 18 do? Right? See, that's the part that we don't understand as non-alcoholics, as quote, normal drinkers don't have the disease. See, I do not identify at all with this physical allergy and this phenomenon of craving. Do not, I've never experienced it. I'm one of those people that I believe it was Bob that mentioned it. The heavy drinker. That's, I'm described right there in that book, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the heavy drinker. You see, my wife's the alcoholic. I got the DWI years ago. Back before it was DUI. You won't see it on my record because I got it during the time when you could do something about it. I paid the triple fine and it was reduced to possession. But I got a DWI. Well, why didn't my wife ever get one? She's a kitchen drinker. She started drinking. She stayed home and drank. I'm out, you'll heard my story. I'm the one out running up and down the road. Can't go home. And sooner or later I had to get home. Okay? So, but it wasn't because of a craving. It was because I was just a heavy drinker and I drank too much that night. It was you know, drunk on the way home. I've been drunk many times. But when I had sufficient reason, I quit. Yeah. See, my wife went into treatment. And the night before we went to get her out of treatment, that Labor Day weekend in 1982, the kids and I went out for pizza because we weren't doing a whole lot of cooking during that period. I got them a pitcher of Coke and I got me a pitcher of beer. And I sat there and I ate pizza and I drank a mug of beer out of that pitcher and poured the second mug. And about that time, the kids were through with their pizza. And I looked around and there were some guys sitting at the next table that I played softball with. And I took that pitcher of beer and got up and walked over to the table and set it down and gave it to them. I walked back over and looked at the kids and I said, "They tell me that your mom can't drink. And if she can't drink, I won't drink." And I quit that night, 14 and a half years ago, in support of her. Okay. Two important things. Number one, I have not had a drink since then and it has not been a problem. I just got up and walked away from it. Number two, I don't drink today, but it's not because of Shirley. I know that Shirley today, because of her recovery, would stay sober whether I drank or not. She has also told me, though, that it would probably be without me. I don't drink today because I just don't find it necessary. Period. Just don't find it necessary. But I've never experienced this craving. I do not understand what you guys and gals are talking about when you start talking about craving. What I do understand from you people is that the craving comes after you take the first drink. And that's what the book says in the doctor's opinion. It says after you have taken the first drink, after you have succumbed to that desire, and the phenomenon of craving develops. So that gives me insight into your recovery. Now I know that any recovery that you might have has to be prior to the first drink. Okay? And that's the reason that entire abstinence is necessary. Right? Now, what I've bracketed off here is the physical side of the disease. And that's the part that we, as non-alcoholics, do not understand, is the physical side of the disease. What is an allergy? What is an allergy? An allergy is nothing more than an abnormal reaction. If you're allergic to something and I'm not, you're going to react to it differently from me. Okay? Let's talk about, now I'm talking to the Al-Anons now so they can get some understanding. Let's talk about another allergy that maybe we're more comfortable with, an allergy to strawberries. Okay? What happens if you're allergic to strawberries and you eat them? Break out in a rash and start itching, don't you? Yeah. Okay? So if you're allergic to them and I'm not, and we sit down with a bowl of strawberries, something's going to happen to you that's not going to happen to me. Okay? You're going to break out in that rash and you're going to start itching. That rash and that itch is the manifestation of your allergy. That's how you know you're allergic to it. Okay? The minute you stop eating strawberries, does the rash and the itch go away? Not just that minute. It takes a little while. It takes a few hours, doesn't it? The body has to process what you've put in. Only then does the rash and the itch go away. So all of a sudden you know you're allergic to strawberries, so what do? You stop eating them, don't you? What happens 5 years from now if you sit down and eat a bowl of strawberries? The rash and the itch. Why? Because you don't cure allergies. You just treat them. Okay? We don't cure any allergies. Dust, wheat, animals. We don't cure them, we treat them, don't we? The allergy to alcohol is the same way. You don't cure it, you just treat it. How do you treat all those other allergies? Abstinence. How do you treat this allergy? Abstinence. The difference in this disease is the mental obsession that we'll talk about in a minute. We don't have a mental obsession to strawberries. All right? And we're going to talk about what the mental obsession is in a minute so we'll understand that. But it's important that you understand the allergy. This is the reason that your loved one who's alcoholic has got to stay abstinent the rest of their life if they're going to stay in recovery, one day at a time. Not the rest of their life, one day at a time, okay? Now, we treat all the allergies the same. We treat them by abstinence. As long as you don't drink, when you don't drink and you give the body time to process the alcohol, guess what goes away? The craving, doesn't it? Yeah. And now you have, if you're free of alcohol, you have the physical part of the disease under control. And every alcoholic I've ever talked to about this said that's the easy part of the disease to control. That's the easy part. And now comes the hard part. I was talking to a guy on the phone the other day, and he said, my family is telling me that I need to go into treatment. And he said, and they're telling me that I need to go to AA, and they keep talking to me something about 12 steps. And he said, I don't think I need any of that. He said, I've quit drinking by myself 3 different times. I said, sure you have. Sure you have. I said, let me tell you something else. I can introduce you to some guys that will quit 3 times in one day. And I said, what's the 12-step program about? It's not about quitting. It's about staying quit. I said, the first time you quit, if you'd have got involved in the 12-step recovery program, you might not have had the other two. And then all of a sudden he said, oh. So once we get the alcohol out of the alcoholic system, got the physical part of the disease under control. The allergy is in a state of, I almost said arrest. Let's say remission. The state of remission. Okay? And now, of course, what the alcoholic has to do, if they're going to be successful in their recovery, is they have got to get involved in a program that will help them to learn to live with the mental obsession. Now, let me tell you, Al-Anon, this is where we fit in to the disease of alcoholism, right here. I don't understand your allergy and your craving, but let me tell you something, I do understand your mental obsession. I'm right on line with you there. What is a mental obsession? A mental obsession is nothing more than a thought that overcomes all other thoughts. It can be so strong at times that it can rule out reason. We got a step that talks about something called sanity. Mental obsession can rule out sanity. It can become insane thinking. Give you a little exercise here that will demonstrate that. We go to you gals. We'll start with you gals. We go down. You go down to the mall, and you only go down there to go to the Merle Norman store. I used to, when I did that, I used to say to get $5 worth of cosmetics, and Shirley straightened me out on that. you're going down there to get $25 worth of lipstick. And that's all you've got to get up there at the mall today is just that those cosmetics. And so you park your car and you get out and you're walking down through the mall headed to the Merle Norman store, and about halfway down through the mall you pass Bose Boutique. And there's that outfit in the window. Now, you didn't go in there to get an outfit. You went in there to get some lipstick. But it caught your eye. And you stop and you look. And you browse and you think, and then you go on down to Merle Norman and you get your cosmetics. Now, when you get your cosmetics down at Merle Norman, there's an exit door out to the parking lot. And you could go out that exit door into the parking lot and walk back up and get in your car. But what do? No, you come back up through the mall because the obsession has been triggered. And you're going back and you're going to go in and you're going to look at that outfit, and they got one in your size and you take it in the dressing room and put it on. Darn, it looks better on you than it does in the window. Okay? And during that process, of course, you take a look at the price. Oh, my God. You look at the price tag. Sanity says, sane thinking says, I've got enough outfits at home in my closet to suit any occasion that's going to come up for me in the next year. Yeah, I've got that many clothes at home hanging up, paid for. Insane thinking says, but you know, the daughter is 17 years old and she's dating, and that knight in shining armor may come along at any time, and if he does, He's going to ask her to marry. They're going to get married. We're going to have to plan a wedding. I'm going to need an outfit, and this one is perfect. Yeah. See, that's insane thinking. And so what do? Of course, you find, you either take some grocery money, you charge it, that plastic money that we don't have. You find a way to get the outfit. That's obsession. That's insane thinking. You guys, I'm not going to leave us out. We're a little bit worse. We have something in Birmingham, and I'm sure you have in most cities of any size, once a year, and it's called a boat and RV show. Okay. Yeah. We go up there and pay $10 to get in so we can trigger our obsession. We buy our way in there. I got a brother who's in the boat business for years, and he'll tell you, the boat show in Birmingham is in February. March and April, their biggest month, selling people $30,000 and $35,000 rigs and having to take them to the river and show them how to get it off the trailer and crank it. Never had one before in their life and don't know whether they're going to enjoy it or not. Went to the boat show. Obsession was triggered. You want to try out your obsession? On the way home today, pick out any car dealership in the area. And then you ain't even got to get out of your car. They ain't even got to be open. Just pull up to the showroom where you can see in on the showroom, and what are you going to see? You're going to say the prettiest, brightest, most deluxe, finest models they make, aren't you? They don't put the stripped-down pickup truck with the black wall tires on the showroom floor. Why? Because they want to trigger your obsession, trigger your insane thinking. That's what this mental side of the disease is. What is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker? It's in your book. What is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker? Chris will show you. It's on page 30. The great obsession is that somehow, someday, you will control and enjoy your drinking. That's the great obsession. And it says in the following sentence, I can't quote it, that you will follow that to the gates of insanity and death. That's a pretty strong obsession, isn't it? What is the great obsession of every untreated Al-Anon? What is the great obsession? It's not in any of our writings, but what is the great obsession? That somehow, someday, I will control, or I will change, or I will fix that abnormal drinker in my life. And sometimes we might follow that obsession to the gates of insanity or death. So what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, and what your 12-step program is about for AAs, is about learning to change that mental obsession, learning to live with that insane thinking. Is it not? Sure it is. A lot of things happen along the way. What is the 12-step program of Al-Anon about? Learning to live with that obsession. Learning to change that focus. Okay? Clancy was right on target last night when he said, Al-Anon is about learning to take the focus off of them and put it on ourselves. That's exactly right. That's what we do, and we do that through those 12 steps. Okay? So this is where we fit in to the disease of alcoholism. This is the reason it's called a family disease. This is the reason. And way back there in 1982, when my wife came out of that treatment center, she was physically sober. She had been in there 38 days. And she was as physically sober then as she is today. Okay? But when we walked into that Bessemer AA group, that's the reason that when they looked, they didn't know whether I was going in the AA room or she was going in the AA room. That's the reason that when we checked my wife into that treatment center, the kids looked at the counselors and said, we know what's wrong with Mama. We can smell it. What we'd like to know is what's wrong with Daddy. Daddy's crazy. And it's not, we can't, you know, he's crazy when he hadn't had a drink. The mental obsession, the insane thinking. The great obsession for them is to control and enjoy the drinking. The great obsession for us is to control and enjoy them. Now, what I want to do, who's a good writer? Just step right up here and write. What we're going to do, that keeps me from having to get over there. I want you to tell me, Al-Anons, just Al-Anons, I want you to share with me, and we're going to write them up here on the board, some of the pains and some of the emotions and some of the feelings that you experienced in the disease of alcoholism when there was active alcoholism going on. And I'm going to start you off with one or two that I talked about in my story yesterday, like anger, okay? Remember I talked about anger and I talked about resentment, okay? What are some of the other ones that you experienced? Rage, okay? Failure. Okay, we're not going to get too fast here. What? Okay. Failure, what we go to? Isolation. How about another one? Fear. Maybe that should be the big one, shouldn't it? Maybe that ought to be at the top of all of it. Okay? Because I think we all are fear-based individuals. How about some more? Any of you ever experienced any shame? How about guilt? Were any of you ever told that you were responsible and you believed it and you felt guilty? I did. Yeah. Okay. Self-pity. Any of you ever feel any self-pity? Okay. Give you another long one. How about embarrassment? Okay. Another person's actions embarrassing us, okay? Because we felt like we were responsible for it. Okay. How about this one? Lying. I became the world's greatest liar. I could look you dead in the eye and make you believe it. And you know why? Because I had done it so much that I had gotten to the point that I believed it. You know, in Al-Anon, in our literature, is riddled with the word denial. Okay? We got a pamphlet called Merry-Go-Round of Denial. We talk about denial, denial, denial. Alcoholics Anonymous does not use the word denial that much. They use another word. What is it? Delusion. Exactly. And I think for me, denial is up here in the head, where I really know the difference. I'm just not going to admit it. I'm not ready to face it. Delusion is, I believe the lie. I'm living the lie. And I believe that I got to that point in my life where I was living the lie. Okay? Y'all think of any more that you want to put on the list? Lonely. Yeah. Frustrated. Okay. And we could go on and on and on. Now, AA, I need to hear from you. Number one, are there any on this list that's on this board up here that you don't identify with? And you're all shaking your heads. You all agree that you identify with each one of these two? You felt these things? You experienced these things? Any that you want to add to this? Depression? Okay. Good one. Defeated? Okay. Helpless? Empty. Back to the Al-Anons. Y'all identify with these that we added? You see where I'm going with this, folks? What I'm telling you is that once we get the drinking out of the way, thank you, once we get the alcohol out of the system and you shake us out of a sack, it's hard to tell who's who. It's hard to tell the difference. Yeah. When we come falling out of the sack, it's hard to tell who's the AA and who's the Al-Anon, who's the non-AA. And I needed to know that. I needed to learn that because I was being told in Al-Anon that we would work the same 12 steps as they worked in AA, with the exception of changing that one word in the 12th step. And for you that don't know what that is, in the 12th step for AA, it says you carry the message to alcoholics. And in Al-Anon, it says we carry the message to others. If you go back to the original manuscript for AA, it says you carried the message to others, especially alcoholics. So that's the one word that's different, okay? And I needed to know why I was going to be able to get better when I didn't have the disease. And as I learned these things, I began to gain that awareness. Now I know what it means to me in the first step when it says, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. Now I know that what I heard, what I was told early on in Al-Anon was pure bull, and I needed to disregard it. Because see, when I started to question that in Al-Anon meetings, and I started to say, well, wait a minute, I'm not so sure I'm powerless over alcohol. Okay? Because I quit. I could drink or not drink. I put it down and walked away. Instead of those people handing me one of the greatest Al-Anon pamphlets we've got, and one that the gals never read, but I suggest that you go back to your home group and get a copy of it and read it. And it's a pamphlet called Al-Anon is for Men. There's no reason that a woman would pick that up, but go back and get one and read it. It's the greatest explanation of step one that we have in Al-Anon. And it ought to be called step one, I think. But instead of them handing me that pamphlet and say, here, this will give you some understanding, what I was told was, well, Bo, what you need to do is you need to read that step as we admitted we were powerless over the alcoholic and that our life had become unmanageable. And I looked at it and I said, I can't buy that because that's not what it says. If they meant for that step to say we're powerless over the alcoholic, then that's what they would have put. But see, by leaving the step the same, it allowed me to go way beyond my dealings with my alcoholic. And that's where I needed to go. I needed to get beyond that. Okay? You're told in the big book, liquor is not your problem. Okay? Alcohol is a symptom of your problem. Well, how does that equate to us in Al-Anon? My alcoholic was just a symptom of my problem. And if I take that bad information that I was given and make the first step, say I'm powerless over my alcoholic, I'm going to stop right there and I'm not going to go on into recovery, you see. Okay. And what I had to do is I had to learn what it means in that first step. And it means that because of all these feelings and all these emotions and all these pains that are going on in my life, okay, I am now being controlled by my feelings and controlled by my emotions. And I'm powerless over the whole deal. And as a result of trying to exhibit a power in my life that I don't have, my whole life has become unmanageable. Okay. I have to do that. I've heard people say you do the second part first and then come back to the first part. I have to do that step from the frontwards, just like it's written. I have to come to grips with the fact that I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over alcohol if you drink it. I'm powerless over alcohol if I drink it, what it does to me and my system. I'm powerless over what you do once you're under the influence of alcohol. I'm powerless over what you do when you're not under the influence. I am of myself. I'm powerless. Okay? And that hyphen in that sentence means that because I'm powerless and don't know it, my life has become unmanageable. But I had to go through this process to get there. I had to know something about the disease of alcoholism, and I had to know where I fit into it. And I fit into this disease on the mental side of it, on the obsession side of it. I got a good buddy that knows a whole lot about this stuff down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and his name's Tom B. Maybe some of you have been able to hear Tom share. He's one of the most spiritual people that I've ever been around in this program. And Tom says that in the second step where it says being restored to sanity, he says maybe that means being restored to the point that I can recognize what is good for me and do it, and what is bad for me and not do it. Now that's pretty simple, isn't it? Pretty simple. And as I look back on my life before Al-Anon, number one, I did not know what was good for me and what was bad for me. I thought I did, but I was so confused and so caught up and so turned around that I didn't know. And my sponsors were able to point that out to me in my inventory work. Because, see, my sponsors told me, I questioned them. You know, I'm one of these that ask a lot of questions. And we're getting ready to do this inventory work, and they're telling me about how I'm going to write down all my resentments and the causes, and I'm going to write down fears and causes, and I'm going to write down sex harms that I've done and the causes. And I look at it, and I said, well, over here it says that in doing my inventory, I can list my assets with my liabilities. Now, where do I put my assets? You're talking about putting down all the bad things. Where do I inventory my good things? Because it says that in some of the literature. And they said, well, if you've just got to, you make your little separate sheet over here and put down your assets, and we'll take a look at them. Well, I didn't have many, but I had one that I was, and really, that I was proud of. And that asset that I put down was, I am a very, very well-liked person. Everybody likes Bo. And I thought that was a great asset, to be liked as well as I was liked, until my sponsors got a hold of it. And of course, you know what they turned it into? They turned it into what it was, people-pleasing. Sure. And made it one of the biggest character defects that I had. So the point I'm trying to make is, what I thought was my greatest asset turned out to be my greatest liability, and I didn't know what was good and what was bad. And one of the things that's happened with me in recovery is I have been restored to the point that at least today I can recognize what is good for me and sometimes do it, and what is bad for me and sometimes not do it. All right? But without this information, I would have been unable to do it. So, by going through this process and seeing where I fit into the disease of alcoholism, into this mental obsession and physical allergy and craving thing, where I fit into it, and knowing now, today, how I can implement the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is what our traditions say, Al-Anon tradition, do it by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves. I can implement those 12 steps in my life, and I can recover from the effects of the disease of alcoholism on me. That's about, and we're running, getting way up close here to almost closing time. That's about what I wanted to share with you this morning, with what I had learned, and maybe give you a little more insight into the disease so you'd have a little better understanding. This is real dangerous and real scary, but I don't know, I'm feeling real spry this morning. I'll entertain a question or two if you have it, as long as you're nice and don't make it too hard. Yes. My wife? Yeah. My daughter is in San Diego. My wife has been in Sioux Falls. But she is beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And she does. Yeah, short hair, and it's, yeah, years ago she used to put gray in it. Now she just gets a permanent. Yes. Well, absolutely. Go ahead. Okay. The question is, do you think you can be alcoholic and still have some issues that you need to go to Al-Anon for? And if so, how do you do that, and how do you, in AA, put the emphasis on self, and in Al-Anon, or in AA, put the emphasis on not drinking, and in Al-Anon, put the emphasis on changing me and the way I live. Number one, I firmly believe, and I know Al-Anon is growing bigger and bigger with people we call double winners. Double winners are recovering alcoholics that come into Al-Anon. I also want to share this with you, and it's something that I learned not too long ago. Any old drunk, once he makes the decision, can get into AA. You got to know somebody to get in Al-Anon. And I think that's important. The hard thing, it seems, for the people that I have seen, double winners, and we were talking about this earlier back there, the hard thing I see for alcoholics who come into Al-Anon is for them to leave their AA out there and come into Al-Anon and start over. Start over with a new outlook. Same, you know, they want to say it's the same steps. It is the same steps, but it's a different objective, a different perspective, a different outlook. And what they have to do is they just have to learn how to do that. There's some things we talk about in Al-Anon that you never talk about in AA, and that's things like detachment, okay? That's the big one, is detachment. And I think one of the things that we encourage down in our area is that the very first thing the AA needs to do when they come into Al-Anon is get them a real strong Al-Anon sponsor, one that can help them make that division in their two programs. And then we start talking to them about, you know, things like, well, you're told don't take your AA to church and don't bring your church to AA. Well, you know, don't bring your AA to Al-Anon and don't take your Al-Anon back in there. When you're in those AA rooms with those AAs, you need to be down and dirty and to the gritty about staying sober, don't you? Yeah, learning to live without drinking. Okay? And when you come into Al-Anon, we defocus off of that issue and we focus on how to live with people, how to get along with people, and how to be a successful member of society and put the emphasis back on ourselves. And it is a tricky deal, and it's just like the recovery from alcoholism. It's not an event. It's a process. It takes a little time. But we're seeing more and more and more of, and we're seeing some even, and this seems to be going on all across the, maybe starting from the west and it's moving toward the east. AA's coming into Al-Anon and saying, my sponsor told me to come to Al-Anon. AA sponsors are telling people, you got living problems, you got relationship problems, you need to go to Al-Anon. Okay. And it certainly can work. The other thing that we tell AAs in our area, in our group down there, when they come into Al-Anon is, we tell them, you've been going to 5 meetings a week, okay, that needs to be 4 AA and 1 Al-Anon. And don't down the road make it 3 AAs and 2 Al-Anons, because then further down the road, you'll make it 2 AAs and 3 Al-Anons, and you're going to get in trouble. Keep it in focus. Keep you in the forefront of your mind, if you're an alcoholic, what your major, major problem is. And stay in that room where you can deal with it. Because, any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Hi, Ms. Chink. I can't believe you were ever bored. Ha ha ha!